What is up, everybody? This is Recap Rewind. I'm J-Lag.
And I'm NB.
And we are recapping and reviewing You on Lifetime. This is episode 3.
Yep.
And it's called
Maybe. Maybe he will.
Maybe he won't.
But he probably but he will.
And he did.
And don't forget, guys, stick around for our ending because we are going to go through our roundups, our best moments, our best lines, our MVPs, our LVPs. So make sure you stick around for that.
And for anybody who has just found this podcast, thanks for listening. Make sure you guys subscribe to the channel and let's get right into it.
Let's go.
So, Gurr, what did you think of the episode?
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. This show's just getting better and better.
Every episode.
I love it. It's so juicy and steamy and effed up and creepy and like everything.
Is anyone who's been kind of been following along since the beginning of our podcast so far, we did read the book. It has been a while, so I'm forgetting a lot of things.
Some things were like, was he in the book? Was that in the book?
But I will say that as a viewer, I'm sure it is such riveting television because reading the book, you get to these points in the book and you're like, yes, yes, oh yeah, like all the dramatic moments they've thrown into the first three episodes, and you forget how exciting the book was to
read. Let me just say this now, I know you guys want to stick around for the ending because we're going to discuss that, but like their sex scene, like I was so hyped for that.
Yeah,
I completely forgot what happened until that moment. And then so I was like, yo, it's gonna be so lit, and I'm like, oh no, I remember it wasn't lit for him. So like like even me, like I'm forgetting it as it's going, and I'm trying to watch it and enjoy it and like enjoy what's coming up next. So hopefully if you're a book reader, like you're doing the same thing, but it's hard. Like a lot of the time it's really hard.
But yeah, like the point that I'm just trying to make is that they're doing a really great job keeping you on edge with what's going to happen next. And it's been an exciting show so far.
Yeah, for sure. So the episode basically starts off with
Joe and Beck, and they're basically friendsies, kind of like friends with benefits. I don't really know like how she's categorizing him. He thinks that they're like dating proper. So they're on a coffee date, I think. And he's narrating and he's saying, finally, Benji's kind of like out of your mind. And like you're not thinking about him anymore. And Joe's like still like feeling pretty good about himself and feeling good about the relationship.
He's like, to everyone, you're invisible. But to me, you won't. He's like, I'll see you all the time. Like, so this scene was actually like them walking and stuff.
It's just them walking down the street.
This was the moment that like got me. I was like, oh shit.
No.
Like, he's being really cute.
Guys,
like,
everybody rewind to episode 1 of this podcast.
No, episode 2. I was hating on him, like literally. No, but this was the moment. Like, I don't know if it's just, that's what I mean. I feel like it's Penn Badgley too. And I feel like it's the way he's acting. He's such a good actor.
Absolutely.
He's so natural. Like the littlest thing is like him grabbing her hand. I was like, oh shit. I'm like, okay, I'm starting to feel some type of way
he's
now.
He's doing everything like, right.
He's really, really cute.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't even deny that.
Yeah, for sure.
So like he got me in that moment. So that he was being really cute.
Yeah, we had one of our rewinders actually say the exact same thing. If it wasn't Penn Badgley, it might be a completely different story and a completely different like view.
Yeah.
He's a handsome guy. He's charming.
And I think it's even beyond like definitely last week I was like, because he's really like handsome. But I think it's even beyond that. I think it's what he brings as an actor to the scene. Like he's very warm and he's very like, there's just things that you can't really teach an actor. It's not in their script. It's kind of what he does when he's around Beck in that moment. And it's like, look, I'm totally falling for it too. So like the acting is like on point.
Yeah. You're falling for him.
So in that moment, what happens?
The one big thing that you have to just keep an eye on as this story goes on, and it happens in the book as well, is he brings up Candace once again.
Yes.
He does say...
well, she brings her up.
Yeah. So she brings her up because of what happened at the party last episode.
Right.
She was like, oh, so you had a girlfriend? He was like, yeah, it's complicated. I don't really want to get into it because it's like, you know, old relationships and whatever.
So
she's obviously aware of it now. She's aware of Candace. It's not just like him talking
and
to us.
It's funny
in his
because
head.
Last week we asked that too. We were like, we wonder if like Beck booked that.
Yes.
And clearly she did and it stuck with her and she remembered that moment. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting was during this whole scene, like as they're talking, he's also saying his voiceover.
Right.
So as she's asking, like, who was that chick from last week, whatever, he's like, of course, this question, like the inventory of who we've dated before.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, Beck? You're like, I'm not ready to tell you, Beck. And I forgot how creepy his like voiceover was.
Right.
Because like, it's not even that like he's like talking about this moment. He's like talking as if he's talking to her. Yeah. But he's not talking. He's writing in a book. He's or like,
Beck,
like,
it's in so, due time.
Yeah. Like he's like, I'll tell you soon, Beck, but not yet because you're not ready, Beck. I'm like, oh, it's so creepy.
But then he's talking to her in real life at the same time. It's just weird. It's like double layered talking. Okay. So then that date ends, I guess, the date. And then it cuts to Benji in the basement still.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I guess I got to deal with this bullshit. And the body's like decaying.
That shook me. Like, it's pretty gross. They made Benji's body because I guess like at some point, like Joe covers it with like a sheet.
Yeah.
So you see this really cool aerial shot of the body and then like the sheet pulls off.
Yeah.
He looked like a zombie, like from Walking Dead. Apocalypse. Like his eyes were like glassed over, like. Oh, it was really
freaky. And he was leaking.
Yeah, he was like oozing pus. And he's like ugh. They definitely like, it's so weird because this episode, like, I sort of fell in love with Joe Goldberg, but at the same time, like, these shots of this crazy decaying body was like, yo, this guy's actually like crazy.
That being said, though, he does play it very interesting, and I don't know if it played off the same in the book. In the book, it almost seemed like he was just trying to get away with murder, whereas in this story and the way that it's positioned, I almost feel like he was completely ill-equipped to deal with what he's about to deal with. You know, he even has to look to his books, his best friends or whatever he says, to find out how to get rid of a body. So in the book,
you felt like he was more like
calculated. Yeah, I felt like he knew that he was going to kill Benji. It happened. I think there was a bit of a struggle, like, mentally, where he was like, I don't know what's going to happen. But then once it happened, he was like, okay, I'm going to get rid of this body. Like it felt like he already knew what he was going to do next.
Yeah.
But the way that they positioned it was very much like, I'm not sure what's happening. I think they do kind of allude to the fact that he's like not a pro killer, but they definitely emphasize it more. But they do show him like
throwing up.
They throw, like, yeah, exactly. Like that's what I mean. He's like squeamish. They make him look
like an amateur. So you're kind of like, oh, he probably just did this by accident. Like
exactly. And I don't know why they're playing it that way, but I think that there's a level of disconnection for a lot of people who claim to be serial killers, right? Or killers in general. They have a disconnect from like the actual act. Like they're like, I will kill somebody, but I don't want to deal with a body. That's decaying. It's disgusting. Like they don't know the consequences of their actions, if that makes any sense. So it seems like he's in that particular vein where he basically throws up as soon as he tries to like move the body. Yeah. But yeah, he still has to figure out. No, he was trying to smash his face.
Yeah.
Because he wants to get rid of his dental records. Yeah, or something.
The teeth, right?
So, yeah, I'm like, considering you don't know how to move a body, you know a lot about freaking moving.
For some reason, like, I thought he was like going to chop it up, but I'm like, oh, I guess he's not.
Well,
that,
he does say that too. He was like, I guess that's an option too, but he's like, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. It's disgusting. But that's what I mean. Like, he's very much like not a serial killer. Like, I'm going to chop up a body. Like, he has no enjoyment in that part of the process.
Right.
Anyway, then it cuts to our girl Becky, Becky at school. And she's starting her new class because she just got the transfer from the guy who sexually assaulted her.
Yeah.
And she meets a new character, a new side character named Blythe. Remember this girl because she does play a part as the story goes on. To be completely honest, and this is not a spoiler at all because I completely don't remember
what her significance is. I was talking to Jalek before too, and I was like, I remember her name specifically being in the book, but I'm completely like drawing a blank as to what her purpose was, what her character was supposed to be.
I'm sure it's important.
And it's totally fine. And I'm okay with that. Super like, I'm okay with like being surprised a little bit with this series.
Yeah.
Because like, I feel like we know a lot. So,
yeah, as a book I'm reader, okay I'm with just that. Like, I don't care. Yeah,
And I love her character. Like, right off the bat, she was like, oh, hey, she goes, you're back. She goes, are you from Jersey? Like, AKA calling her like a basic bitch. And then she's like, no, I'm from like Nantucket.
I love what she said, even about social media. She was like, social media, the death of her generation.
Oh, I'll just like tweet about that, and she's like, okay, social media, she's very much the opposite of Beck,
right?
And it's funny because
intellectual,
I was like low-key, I was like, yo, this girl's old, like Blythe is like for sure, like she's like old, and she's like, I was born in 88. I was like, oh shit, like I'm old.
That's
Here I am thinking she's like way older. She's way older. And like she's like, no. She's like
really book smart.
Yeah.
But I do remember her being introduced in this story in the book. And I remember all those lines that came up and how she was kind of digging at Beck.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Beck was kind of like I love you though. Like, you're so smart.
No, she's very impressed by her too. She's not like, who's this girl? Like, she's so mean. She's just like, who is this girl?
Like, she literally was like, she's I tweeted your article. And she was like, tweet, ill.
Yeah.
Like, she was like the ill girl. Anyway, yeah, so just keep an eye on her because I think she's going to play a big role in the story. And then it cuts to Beck talking to her homies, her girls. And Peach is essentially hearing about Blythe for the first time. And she was like, I'm so like in love with her.
She's so cool. She's like, she's so much better than us.
And Peach, you can tell in her character and the way that
her eyes are very like
expressive. But at the same time, I think Peach's character, you see it a lot in this episode where she flips to one opinion and then she, as soon as Beck kind of tells her like it is, she flips right away.
She's like a yes girl.
She moves for sure. She moves into it. But right away she thinks that she can like have something over Beck. But then she's like true. She like listens to Beck the second time.
Yes.
So even when Beck says like she's telling her about Blythe, and then Peach is like, she sounds like a stuck up biatch.
Yeah.
And then Beck is like, actually she's super impressive. Cool. She's super smart. She actually like did this one special article with her mom.
Yeah.
And then Peach is like, cool. She sounds actually cool. Yeah, like, and I'm like, wow, that was like a super quick flip. So I think you're just learning a little bit of those pieces of
how Peach reacts to Beck for sure.
Precisely.
I think there's like this misconception that like, you know, Beck needs Peach. But like,
it's definitely a little bit of both. And you see it in this episode as like things go on with her getting sick and stuff. But yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. So let's keep talking about dick pics.
Yeah.
It really quickly cuts to the two other girls in the crew.
Like, yeah. So they're like talking about like getting all these dick pics on their phone. And like one girl's like, I have like a whole like library. I like numbered it. She's like, it's like organized. But then I realized that like Joe's sitting right there.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not notice the guy you've been dating like sitting like right there?
That it's just a baseball cap. Side. He's not even wearing like a disguise. And
first of all, at a bar, like seeing a guy like that, I'd be like, yo, you're a creep. Like, who's wearing a baseball cap in a bar?
Weirdo.
With like a jacket pulled up to his neck. Like, he looks like a creep.
You know what they should, I mean, I guess they can't do that with like the in-person interactions, but I was gonna say they did a lot of like interactions where it's like on the phone, but I guess you can't like be like, he's recording recording from her phone or something.
You know what I was just gonna say? I'm like, I'm surprised he's not like recording her mic or something, because like he has access to everything apparently on her phone.
Yeah. So it's very interesting that I think he does learn this episode that she's like still on Tinder.
Yeah,
right?
Like, I'm talking about that after.
So yeah, this is so that's basically right after she talks about the fact that she's like effing Benji out of her life.
Yeah.
Like, and Peach is like, honestly, like, I'm all for you, but I just want you to like focus on yourself and I want you to be happy and like live your best life.
Because she says, she was like, it was so good last night or something. And then Peach is like, oh, like you screwed like Joe. And she's like, no, I wasn't Joe. Like, I called some next guy over after.
Yeah.
So then he hears that like she like fucked some next guy.
Right. And then she's gagged and so is Joe.
Yeah.
Like, they're both gagged at the same time.
And then Joe's like, yeah.
Yeah. So Joe does get cheese, but then he like looks at her Tinder profile.
It's bullshit, guys. Like, I'm all about breaking these like fucking like plot holes.
Yeah.
Oh. He's like, I had your iCloud password, so I got into your like Tinder app. Like, you can't sign in double time into a Tinder app. Like, she's already logged in once. Like, how are you going to log in twice?
Yeah.
Like, it's so like, guys, come
Definitely
on.
Definitely the author like kind of played with the social media
bullshit
openness
me. Like,
a little
he's
bit.
Like in her like literally in her account looking at the guys that she's currently talking to. You can't do
actually
that.
I think you can, to be
you
honest.
You can log in twice.
I don't know. I haven't been on dating apps for a while, like, but I'm pretty sure I could have done it. Like,
I don't know. That sounds weird. He's like watching her activity as if it's live. You can't. How?
I think it's possible.
No.
Anyway, don't like reach right into
yeah,
it.
Like,
but yeah, so he's able to see her Tinder app stuff, and he gets kind of cheesed because in real time, she's talking to the bar, like a bartender. The bartender's like, "I like your tattoo." It's like cut to them effing in her room.
He was pretty hot, so like, I mean,
we saw his glasses, and like, that's pretty much it.
And like his question.
So he's like effing her, and all the while, like Joe's like
watching
like a freaking weirdo.
First of all, this girl's weird. Like, she's literally fucking in front of the window. Like, girl,
like.
come on. Like, they didn't make it so stupid. Yeah,
they didn't make it so obvious in the book. But when you see it visually, you're like, girl, are you dumb?
In the book, when I was honestly picturing her place, I pictured it like the same building, but I assumed that she was like in the basement. Because like, you know how those like houses have like basements?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was assuming that she lived in the basement and like there was like a little window, right, but you could only really see if you were like walking by, kind of across. But no, this girl's like on the main floor of this huge like townhome, and she's like in front of a bay window.
Right. That being said, though, he does like go up a few extra steps to see her level.
True, from the other building.
From like main street level, you wouldn't necessarily see her like getting fucked. But like, it's just a lot. No, you're right. It's just a lot of visual.
It was almost like too much. It was like too like unbelievable. Like, it's a huge bay window, guys. Yeah. Like,
but then it just. But then it goes right back to like what he says in the very first episode, which is like, you want to be seen, you want to be watched, which is interesting because you want him to feel like he's being objectifying, and he is being this person that is kind of victimizing her, just like making her like an object of admiration. But she does put herself on display. Like, it's not like he's lying. You know, you want him to be like, you want to like look at him and be like, no, you're just being a creep. But like, no, you're being like really open, like, girl. Really, like, open. Super open. This is not like some, anyway, whatever. I don't want to get into it. But moving on, the guy breaks her bed. That's like the end part of that whole thing. Yeah. It's like, boom, boom, boom. Psh,
like, he's like, and your bed's broken. I'm like, how did you know that though?
Right.
Did you hear it like snap?
So right after that happens, it's back to class, and Blythe is like basically like
on fire.
On fire. Yeah. She's like judges this guy so harshly. Yeah. She's like the Simon Cowell of the class. And she's like, you should basically
die. Is she a TA? Yeah. Like, is she a, like, she's not just a regular student, right?
No, I mean, it's a master's program, right? So they're all like at that level of like being literature, like whatever. Because
to me, it felt like she was like closer to the teacher than the other students.
I mean, maybe she is. But yeah, she gave a, like a really harsh critique, and she says something about being unremarkable, which Beck picks up on really quickly because she's like a sponge at this point, and she's like, okay, she doesn't want me to feel like I'm unremarkable, but now she's going to be like pitted against her to like write up this like short story. So it's like Blythe versus Beck, or at least that's what Beck's making it out to be. And then it cuts to Joe, and he's like, okay, gotta get rid of this body. And he turns to fucking Paco to say, Paco, could you buy me all these crazy things?
My list of
like murderous things. Someone. Yeah, it's like, potassium nitrate and like fire and all these crazy different things that you would get. In hindsight, I guess it's smarter because then it doesn't get traced back to him.
But like, Paco is his only connect. Like,
it's his only friend, realistically.
And why is an 8-year-old child getting these things? How is he even going to carry it out of the store?
I don't even know anybody who can find potassium nitrate. It's so random.
No, like, it was such a stupid idea.
I can't even talk about Paco right now, so let's move on to the next bit. So he does that, and he's like, right, he's like, yes, I'm going to get this list from this kid. Cool. Like, bye. While that's happening, he is lurking in on Beck again.
Yeah.
And you can tell that she's like flustered.
He needs like a way to like swoop in.
And he says, he's like, you're not inspired. You're not in like your zone. You need to like get something special. Like, you need to like get your bed fixed and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So then in that moment, because she's like trying to fix her bed while she's like starting to write.
Yeah.
He messages her and he's like, I need to get a side table. Do you want to like go shopping?
Through. Yeah.
And she was like, yes.
She's like, you read my mind. How?
In the book, I think they actually go to an IKEA, I guess, just based on like copyright issues. Logistics. Like, they didn't go to an IKEA. Instead, they ended up going to like a fancy pantsy place that looks like what you would find in probably like a boutique-y version, like a Crate and Barrel or something. So he goes to help her find a bed, and he like doesn't really find a side table.
So right before that, he rolls up with Mr. Moody's car.
Yeah.
Okay. I clearly don't know cars because in my mind, I was thinking of like a shit box.
Oh.
Like, I don't know why I thought his car was like some like rusted old, like broken down car.
Right.
So when he rolled up in this really cool like vintage, I was like, oh, I totally read that wrong.
Yeah. Also, do you find that it's kind of weird that Mr. Moody's like non-existent in this story.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking about it now, and I don't think he even really plays a major role
in the book, but I think he's alive in the book.
He is. Yeah, he's alive.
For sure.
He's even alive right now, but that's what I'm saying. Why give context to this character that doesn't really
Because he still needs him in there. We still need him in there, right?
Anyway, not to spoil it for anybody, like, I don't know what Moody's like real role is whole story.
Anyway, so yeah, I just mentioned the car because I was like, oh, it's a nice car. I didn't know.
So he picks her up, and like, I do love the fact that they're staying pretty true to how the story, the book is read, because everything's almost like to the T in terms of the script. Yeah, he describes her little knotted bun and her hair and how she touches his thigh, which we see, and you're like, damn.
Ooh,
so like, that's the thing. Like, you don't really know. You're getting mixed signals.
Yeah, it's so cute.
So they're walking through this fake IKEA, and she like beelines it right to this like the kitchen area, and she sees the red ladle.
Oh, yeah.
And I almost forgot that this is what he said, maybe because it was all bleeped out during the first two episodes.
They showed it in like the previously on too.
They did show it in the previously on where he talks about the red ladle and how she like jerks off to it, or like no, she likes this.
It's like a daddy thing. She's getting spanked by it.
Spanked, right? Yeah, right. So
I was like, okay, it's obviously coming back in this episode.
So he sees her pick it up, but like he doesn't like ask her the story, because he makes the assumption that he's like, oh, I know that you like get spanked by it.
Yeah, he knows that, but he can't say it obviously.
Yeah. So
she's like, this is my dad's favorite tool in the kitchen.
She's like, he was mad. Yeah, it is. You don't find out the story until later. So anyway, so that happens, and then she's trying to find a bed, and then she reads, while that's all happening, Blythe sends the message for the short story through, and she reads it like in like 0.5 seconds. Yeah. She's like, the story is amazing. I'm like, girl, like, you were like a speed reader. She's just nervous about not being amazing at what she does, and she's like, I'm basically a shitty writer. And he's like, you are not unremarkable. Like, he does like a double negative where he's like, it's not like you're not remarkable, but you're not remarkable.
Yeah,
like something like that. And she just gets all happy, and then they start making out because she's like hot and heavy for him, because she's like,
he said
one nice thing. Yeah. So they start making out like the back area where it's covered up, and he's like, yes, I'm doing this. He's like so excited, and he like starts to like go down. And then she was like, what are you doing? She like pushes him off, and she was like,
was into it, and then she heard the guy coming, and she's like, no, what are you doing? Like,
and then she pushes him away. Then he gets really confused, and I think in the book it's very interesting to see his mindset, because I think it's one of those things where you really don't know who to, I'm not going to say blame, but like who to really, to understand whose side makes more sense. Hmm. From Joe's perspective, he's just confused because first she's into it, and then she like slaps him off. But then at the same time, he doesn't continue the conversation because like it kind of hits the fan like as soon as that happens.
Yeah.
So what happens is they leave IKEA, and he even says, he's like, it's been 10 minutes and you haven't looked at me. Like, he gets very obsessive about how long it takes for her to get back to him, even though they're in the same room. And he doesn't know how to approach that communication.
Yeah.
Because he's a psycho. So then I think in that same moment, while he's packing up the car, he gets a phone call from the bookshop. And Ethan basically says that the power went out and they need to get to the basement. They can pop the lock, but
he's like, no. He's like,
he freaks out. He's like,
just leave.
No.
I'm coming.
Yeah. And then he remembers that he's like, oh, true. Like, I like powered like the humidifiers all around the body, so it stops the decaying. And obviously it blew like a fuse.
Yeah.
So I got to figure that out. And he takes the car.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts the body in the back trunk, essentially.
He wraps up the body, puts it into the trunk.
He's like, I got to just do this. I got to deal with this ish.
Yeah.
So he puts the body in the car. And then right after that, she messages him.
What do you think about him being so available for her? Like, at any time she's like, come through. He's like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, bro, just go dispose of the body first. Like, priorities.
Yeah, for real. But I think he's just, because the relationship is so fragile,
he wants to make sure that he
does the right thing at every given moment. I don't know. I think it's just a very amateur dating move. You know what I mean? Seeing him and how he dates, at least with Beck, you can tell that he doesn't know how to function when it's an actual proper communication back and forth. At the same time, like, I don't know, like, we always worry, just like to talk about like dating for a second, we always worry like not having that conversation right away or being available. We're like, oh gosh, why is he always so available? That's so weird.
Yeah.
But she doesn't seem to care.
No, of course not.
Because she's a bit of a user as well. Yeah, you know?
It's all about her. And like,
and she wants to like get it done when she wants to get it done, and he's happy to oblige in this moment at least, so it works. And they left things at a weird spot, so he's probably like happy to just get back to her and like do stuff, you know.
Do stuff.
So yeah, she messages him, he's like, I'll be right over, and then he fixes her bed, which is cute.
So cute.
Adorable. And I remember in the book
he was so impatient in the book, remember?
He was very impatient. He's like, as soon as I get this bed together, we're gonna break it again. No, he doesn't say that, but like something
such
like that.
A douche.
He was so weird and gross.
Yeah.
You do notice that she has like an alcohol problem in the book more, because they are drinking vodka while they're sitting on the bed. And I remember her almost like him saying, like, it's almost like she was like drinking to get the courage enough to say what she needed to say to him. Yeah. So, and like do stuff with him. So on the bed, two major things happen. One thing is she talks about the red ladle, and she tells like the full blown ass story, which is her dad was an addict and he died. And like, that's like the sad part of the whole
story. Very sad moment.
Right. Red ladle. And then Joe's like, oh, you never told me this story. He was like, you were wrong the whole time, Benji. You never really heard her.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. So so then that happens. So that means that she's like opening up to him, which is nice.
Yeah, and he's like totally.
And she does apologize for what happens at the IKEA, the fake IKEA. Yeah. Because she was like, I'm sorry I freaked out on you. It's mostly because I don't want you to see me that way.
Right.
Which is totally fair.
Right.
Because we were also, MB and I were just talking offline about the fact that, like, you know, sometimes you don't want to show that person.
Yeah, she's like, we're more than that right now, whatever.
Yeah, like, she, like, likes him proper. She doesn't want to just, like, F him and leave.
Yeah.
So then they start making out. Mm-hmm. Everything's lit. He's like, yes, I'm going to get it in. In the book, he's, like, about to lose his mind. He's, like, about to, like, bust in his pants. And, and then we get a knock on the door, like a furious knock on the door. And Peach comes through.
Yeah.
And Peach is like, I'm dying. Like, she literally.
She's like, my bladder.
She's like, I got like crazy IBS or something like that. Like,
it was like she got crazy cramps.
So
it wasn't even that.
So I think Beck has to like low-key explain, like, yeah, she's like a very sensitive stomach. And Peach is like, yeah, I'm going crazy. She talks about the one thing that killed me was the alcohol thing, where she's like, I only drink like distilled stuff, like Kettle One.
Something with high pH, like Goose, Kettle One.
Yeah, and he's like, weren't you doing Jaeger shots earlier? Yeah. Like, at your party? She's like, oh, my stomach. It was a pretty funny moment,
like,
actually.
They're really funny together. Yeah. Like, the two of them.
I like the fact that they're really great foils to each other. Yeah, for sure. So you can see that they're pulling each other's, they're pulling the attention from Beck, right? So, like, on one side, Peach is like, pay attention to me. And the other side, Joe's like, yo, are we going to have her or not? Like, So, Joe offers to rot. No, I think Beck is the one that says, could you drive us to the hospital?
Yeah.
And Peach is like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So she goes over, and she's sitting in the car, and she's just being the total princess, right?
She's such a biatch. She's like, I mean, in all fairness, there's a dead body in the back. There's so a dead body. She's like, it smells like putrid, like.
There's a putrid smell coming from the back
of the open the window. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, true, there's a dead body. Literally, like, she's not even exaggerating.
But he doesn't even care. He's like, yeah, sit there in the back with a dead body in the back.
So he rolls on the windows, and there's like in traffic, because obviously who drives in New York City? Like, what the F? She's like, I can't.
She's like, I'm gonna walk. She like walks the entire time, but like freaking Beck's face was like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, she was like, I'm so sorry, whatever. So that they leave. Yeah.
And so they leave, yes, and he just kind of rolls back home. And as he gets home, he sees the policeman at the front door with the parole officer, like, neighbor. And they show him the list. Because Paco lost the list, obviously. Kid, man. I can't with this fucking kid. I'm going to lose my mind.
So basically, the dad's like, yo, you're a creep. Like, who gives a kid this kind of list? Yeah. Like, what are you even trying to hide?
That's why they called the police.
And the cops were like, yeah, like, real talk. Like, what are you trying to hide with this list? Like, who has these chemicals and, like, you know, all these things? And, like, honestly, like, I honestly forgot what Joe ended up saying in the book. So I was kind of, like, shook at this moment, too. Like, obviously, he's not going to get caught.
Yeah.
But I'm like, wait, how does he get out of it? And he's like, oh, he's like, come over here, officers. And he, like, takes him to the garden.
Totally forgot that that happened.
Totally forgot. He's like, I garden and, like, my tomatoes. And the cops are like, oh, true. Like, what a cool guy.
He does use that opportunity to kind of come for the stepdad. Yeah. And he says, you know, like, it just seems like he's pretty neglected or whatever.
Yeah, like, he doesn't eat.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is facts. But at the same time, like, you're, like, ruffling some feathers, bro. Like, relax.
Yeah.
Take it easy. So.
So the cops, like, dip.
Yeah. But he does say how easy it is for him to get away with it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Yeah. He's like, I'm, like, a well-to-do, like, white man. Like, I'm good to go. Like, they're not going to suspect me, obviously.
Yeah.
And he does.
But it's interesting, right? Like, even the parole officers, like, he came up to him. He's like, I know who you are.
Yeah.
I can see it in your eyes. Like, you have, like, you're a freak. So, I mean, he's.
It's weird that he's busting him, but at the same time, I don't like the fact that the parole officer is also an alcoholic. Right. So it's like, couldn't you just make him like a straight shooter? Like, you know, it's kind of weird that they're even introducing this character, which, like I said, is not in the book. Yeah. Or, it's not in the book. Paco and this parole officer are not in the book. Anyway, he gets
away with that.
He gets away with that. And then it cuts to Peach and back in the hospital.
Right.
So Peach is like, oh, finally, I took a I'm dead to go.
What happened? Like, how did she magically heal? Like, did they give her medication?
I guess they gave her medication, whatever. Like, she was probably just going to drink some water. She's going to be fine. So actually, this is a perfect moment to ask this question. We had a tweet come from Twitter saying from at Red Riverdale asking what do you guys think about Peach being quote unquote sick? Was she faking it to get Beck's attention?
Do you think?
Do you think
she was straight out faking it?
I think she was straight up faking it for sure.
Yeah.
I think that she over exaggerates and she knows she can control, like, back, you know?
Yeah.
I think even the moment, and one of the things that we did kind of overlook was the fact that she knew that Joe was there fixing the bed.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. Like, Beck mentions it. I know in the book it's very clear that she's aware that Joe was going
to
be there. Okay,
so I was just going to ask you, like, what was her motivation to, like, interrupt that specific moment? But you're right. If she knew that Joe was over, Hundo, like,
so
she did it on purpose.
She's definitely, like, playing that card of, like, come, like, take my attention or whatever.
For sure.
And I think at the hospital, this whole hospital moment, Beck kind of just rolls her eyes and is like, I'm over you.
Yeah,
like, you're being stupid
right
now.
She's like, you're good now? Cool, I'm going to leave. Bye.
Right. So Peach does say that, and Beck does say, like, I like this guy. Like, I do like him. But Peach says, you know, he's poor. So if you want to have your anniversary at a deli, that sounds great.
Yeah, her speech but was, if like, you don't, pretty then, savage.
Yeah, it was pretty savage. But Beck is like, I don't really care about that kind of stuff. Yeah. He's a really nice guy. And then Peach is like, let's go eat food. And then Beck's like, go fuck yourself. Well, she doesn't say that. No. She's like, I'm
going
to go.
She's like, I'm going home. Bye.
I'm sleep. Bye. Feel better. She's like, glad you're feeling better. And she just, like, leaves.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to Peach being kind of like cheese and, like, a little bit insecure about what just happened. Then it cuts to Joe in the forest and he's gonna dump his body.
Right.
So he takes the body and he's like building like a little funeral pyre or whatever, and he's like getting it ready. And then while that's all happening, he gets a phone call from Beck.
She calls him.
How convenient.
And I'm like, why are you even answering right now?
I know.
Like, go do this first.
I think even in the book, he does the same thing. And I'm like, you're an idiot. Yeah. You're literally killing. Like,
also, like, your cell phone is pinging, like, to, like, how many different towers? Like, if people are going to know that, like, you're in the forest.
We all listen to Serial. Yeah. So we know how that works. But, it was just like a sloppy situation for him to get himself into. Plus, he was high stress.
He's literally dumping gasoline and like on the phone with her.
Like, he's like, listen, so Beck, stupid. It's not a great time.
Like, at the same time, like, there was walkers in the forest.
Yeah.
And so they were coming up to him too to be like, what the F are you doing over here?
Or he wanted to start the fire before they got there.
So it looks like he's like, there's a purpose.
Right. So he's rushing. He's like pouring this potassium nitrate all over the body, which we know from hashtag Riverdale. Because that's what happens anyway. Don't want to spoil another show for somebody who hasn't watched that. But so he's pouring this stuff. He's lighting it up or he's getting it ready. And all the while, Beck is like sorry about today, like Peach is kind of crazy, whatever, whatever. And to kind of get her off the phone, but also in his frustration and rage about the whole situation, he does kind of lay it all down for her. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was trying to get her off the phone. I think it all just kind of came to a head. No, I think
because it was all coming at the same time. Yeah. This guy's like stressed too. He just did freaking kill this guy for this girl.
Right.
It's all coming at him at the same time.
Yeah. So he basically says to Beck, like, what is your game? What are you playing right now? You want me to, like, make out with you, but you don't want me to eat you out in the middle of public. And at the same time, you say that you don't have time for writing, but then you're like, jump at the chance to help out your friend.
Right.
So, like, what is your game? What is your situation? And she kind of gets cheese and he's like, I gotta go, because he's like literally burning a body, and hangs up on her. And so then that whole thing happens, and then, like, he's happy.
Yeah.
He gets away with it.
And he doesn't get caught. Like, people are like, no, it's cool. You're doing a bonfire. Like, sit.
Have a good night or whatever.
By yourself.
Like, weirdo. And, like, already that's a sketchy situation. I would remember that guy. Dude, like,
you would smell like a burning corpse. Like, yeah. You would smell it. They'd be like, what the F? You burning.
Exactly. So, anyway, so he chills there for the night, watches the body burn. And then it cuts to the next morning or like a couple days later. And he's like, I try calling you like 10 times over. It keeps going to voicemail. I'm really, really sad, whatever, whatever. And then he's talking to kids. Like, I think he's like reading to kids.
In the bookstore, yeah.
And he mentions, he was like, so he goes from like this high. And we noticed this even last episode where he goes from this high where like he's like, yes, I'm going on a date with her. Everything's good. And then things like tank so quickly, where he's basically like, I imagined our kids together and what they would look like, and he gets very morose about everything and very dramatic, which is really interesting, because I think one of the things, just really quickly, one of the things that the exec producer as well as the writer did say was, you know, it's, this story is also a reminder that those love stories that people are classically hear, they always think that it's just, you know, influencing women and how the Prince Charming should take care of the girl, but it's also showing the guy how to pursue somebody and pursue this whole romantic concept of what a woman should be like and how they should act. So in this moment, you can see him kind of playing with what the books have taught him all his life, which are like, be a, you know, like, love the girl.
He's a romantic, for sure.
Absolutely. So he's like feeling some type of way about everything. And then she walks into the bookshop.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like reciting in her head, like, what she wants to say to him. And she kind of turns on him and she says, listen, I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. I do put other things in front of my writing. So she does kind of low-key apologize, but at the same time, because she's kind of like in this like word vomit moment, she's like, but I don't know anything about you. Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like, where are your friends? Where do you live? Yeah. Like I want to know more about your situation. And then he was like, you want to know more about me? Like, I'm going to show you my real self. And so he takes her downstairs into the area where,
like the bunker,
the little cage. And he explains the same thing, which is like, these are books. And having her in there and what he says is very interesting, because he says, these books are fragile and they're very special. They need to be protected from the world. And, you know, she's like, so it's almost like he's looking at her at the same time, being like, this is what I want for you. Like, you're special to me. So he shows her that, and then
she's like, yeah,
she's like, I love you.
She's
now.
Like, so excited.
And then it cuts to another moment, I think later, when she's talking to Peach. So Peach is back. So this is like, they end their moment down in the cage.
Yeah.
Like, everything's great. Yeah. They're like mended up, like they're good friends again, or like they're best friends, whatever. And then it cuts to Peach talking to Beck again at her house. And she was like, listen, I'm glad you're okay. She's like, yes, I'm like wearing my robe, I'm getting lit, whatever. And they're in the study, like in the library area. So they're just chilling and they're talking about stuff. And she says, I like Joe.
I really like Joe.
And it's really interesting because, like I said in the beginning of this podcast, where Peach seems to flip-flop a little bit with her mindset. You know what she says in the hospital, where that she's like, Joe's a waste man.
Yeah.
But this time around,
She warms up to it.
She even says, she was like, maybe I could be more like that lifestyle, like more like the simple life or whatever. Essentially, kind of, I think in this moment too, like low key saying, like, I can help you out with that, girl. Like, don't worry about, like, not wanting all the glamour. Like, I can be, like, simple, too.
Yeah.
Which is a huge, like, red flag. But, yeah, so that happens. And then she notices the book is missing.
Like, it's funny because it was, like, right behind Beck, too. She was like, oh, yeah. She's like, she goes, Joe was up here the other night, too, like, during the party. She booked that, right?
Right, yes.
And then she's like, wait. She's like, a book's missing.
Yeah. Because she was in the room with her.
Yeah.
With him.
With him.
And, like,
him.
They had the conversation. Yeah. And then
obviously he did steal it.
Yeah, he did steal it. But it's stupid that he didn't even, like, hide it. Like, he knows that it's a classic book.
And he knows that she found him in there. Like, yeah. You're the only freaking person at this party that was in that room. Like, you're an idiot. Like, what are you doing?
So, do you think that book is going to play a role later on?
I mean, I'm sure. Because
now Beck knows about it, right?
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to come back, 100. I don't remember what happens in the book, though.
Right. Yeah. I just feel like it's probably something.
It will. It will come back, for sure.
That had to have happened.
Or it's just sort of like a thing that, like, makes Peach more suspicious of him.
Yeah, that's true. She's like, interesting. Yeah. Anyway, so the book is missing. That's the end of that. And then it cuts to Paco in the hallway. Mm-hmm. Joe's, like, coming home. And Paco's like, I'm so sorry.
He's like, I left it in my bed.
He literally left the list, like, on his bed. First of all, you were supposed to be going shopping.
Yeah, like, what were you doing in your bed? Why are you sleeping? Go get this.
Go get the stuff done.
This kid is so random.
He's so, I can't even with Paco. So he apologizes. Joe's like, honestly, it's not a big deal. Yeah. I almost went to jail, but it's totally fine.
Seriously.
And then in that moment while he's talking to him, the stepdad comes into the back and he's like drunk. And Joe says, he's like, I can smell it off of him like down the hallway. And he's like, I'm on to you. He's like, I'm drunk. He's like, I'm on to you. I know something's up. And Joe's like, I'm gonna deal with you later.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So once again, the question of whether or not he's going to have to deal with this guy in a murderous way, or I have no idea.
Probably, yeah.
Then it cuts to Beck texting. She's like, come on over. And then she sends like a sexy
picture.
And she's like, hey, she looks like a child.
Like, it doesn't look like a camera selfie. It looks like someone took a photo.
You know on a DSLR,
basically. Totally. Like, that was really good lighting.
Like, really good lighting.
Yeah.
She was, like, smiling too much.
Yeah, so basically he's like, yo!
he runs over. But it was kind of cute because he does bring, like, pancake mix.
Yeah.
Because he wants to, like, make that connection with the ladle.
Make the breakfast.
Make the pancakes.
Make the breakfast the next
morning. But she's not ready for that because she just wants a boom.
Yeah. So, like, they get right in it.
They literally get right in it on the new bed. He comes inside and then...
he comes inside.
I can't do it. So, they're, like, having sex, but it's, like, literally two seconds.
Yeah,
it's 5 seconds, like, later.
One pump, two pumps.
She's
done.
Like, he's like,
poor guy.
Everybody's so excited. I really honestly want to know what everybody else dead. Who hasn't read the books, like, how they felt about that moment.
So definitely, like, and that's the funny thing. Like, even though, like, I read the book, but, like, I was still legit so excited for this moment because I was like, yes, he's gonna get it in. Like, good for him. In, yeah. Like, honestly. And then as soon as it started, I was like, oh, I remember how this ends. And then it was already done. So I was like, oh, poor guy.
And literally the episode ends just
right
as fast.
There, which is the best, like, ending. Like, they had to do it that way.
Yeah, so he comes too quick.
Yeah, and then she was like, did you, like, what?
Is it over? are you done now?
Hello? So that was it. So that's how it finishes.
Like, her poor face. She just looks so disappointed. She, like, represented every girl in the world who never gets an orgasm.
I mean, like, this poor guy has so much, like, pent up, like, he should have, like, he's jerked off before or something.
Yeah.
Like, he should have known better.
Yo, clearly he's never watched that movie, like, something about Mary. Like, you have to deal with that before you go on the date.
Because, like, yeah, no, that was, like...
Yeah, it was way too fast.
So, yeah, that's how the episode finished.
Poor Joe. So, at this point, do you feel really bad for him?
Yeah. Like, no matter how psycho, like, you are.
That's just a bad look.
That's just bad.
So tight. All right, we could all sympathize, I guess, at some point.
And it's a very, like, human, like, thing. Yeah. Like,
it's like sag. It's just like, it happens.
Yeah.
Shit happens. Yeah.
So we'll see how he kind of recovers after.
Right, next episode.
Or if he makes it up. Like, you can still make it up, but I don't remember if he does or not.
We'll see. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is the end of the show. Ends episode 3 because she's like, I'm done with you.
Yeah.
All right. That's the end of the episode. Let us do our
recap roundups.
Best moment.
My best moment was him trying to burn the body. I think that was really, like, it was more higher stakes. And, like, best moment as in it was good television.
Right, it was suspenseful.
I'm like, ooh, who are these people? Like, he really wants to get in. And at the same time, he did drive the story a little bit further, faster, just because he was, like, laying it all down with her in that moment. You know, I feel like if they didn't have that whole fire moment, it would have taken like 7 more dates for him to be like, yo, what's your game though? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This was a good opportunity for him to be like, yeah, what's your game? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
What was your best moment?
My best moment was the early arrival for Joel Goldberg. Just because, like, I died.
I wish that was the name of the episode.
I was, like, dying of laughter. But also, like, the way it happened, I was, like, so lit for that scene.
Yeah.
But as soon as, like, I think they got into the bed, I was like, oh, I remember how this finishes. And, like, it was finished. So, like, it was just really funny.
Right.
But also sad. And I felt after.
Was it
like, how awkward must that be?
Yeah.
How awkward is that to, like film that scene?
I don't think it's not that, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
poor Penn Badgley.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, this guy needs to, like, get nominated for, like, an Emmy or something. WTF moment.
My WTF moment was the him trying to go down on her at IKEA.
Yeah.
Because I think I remember seeing in the book and being very confused as to how she was feeling. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, forgetting about the fact that visually, when you see it on screen, you're like, true, it's such an awkward thing to do.
Yeah.
He was so ready to oblige, but at the same time, it was very like, but why did you think that was appropriate?
Yeah, see those, like, little errors that he makes, right? That he just doesn't know what he's doing. And he's so nervous.
So,
like,
seeing it on screen, I was like, yeah, that is definitely a WTF moment.
Yeah.
Like, boy, relax. Take it down a few notches.
Yeah. My WTF moment, I think, was just seeing Benji's corpse. Because, like, obviously in the book, like, yeah, it's a dead body. But, like, seeing it, like, visually and, like, how they dressed him and his eyes looked really, like, fucked up. And he looked like a zombie. Like, he really did. And it was just, it was funny that this one episode where I'm, like, starting to fall for Joe is also the one where, like, you drastically see how disgusting he is and, like, how dark he got by killing this guy.
Right.
Leaving his body there. It's, like, oozing out. Like, it was just so gross. Mm-hmm. And every time they showed it, I was like, yo, this is disgusting.
Like I
it's
said,
very easy to forget. It's very quick, of easy course. To forget, like, what he's done. Mm-hmm. But then them cutting back to, like, Benji's, like, freaking body, it's like, oh yeah,
true. I mean, going back to what I said earlier, I think at the end of the day, he's not really a classical murderer, so he doesn't really know what he's doing, and he doesn't know how to deal with the cleanup and the and all that jazz. So
MVP.
My MVP is gonna be Joe. Probably the first time ever.
Really?
Maybe the only time ever.
This episode?
Yeah.
After how it ended?
Yeah, I think despite the ending, the shortcomings.
That was good.
Despite that, I think that he got rid of a body, which is, like, kudos. Like,
cool.
Good
You're
for
cool.
you. And he kind of, like, bagged his girl. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, he didn't really, though.
But like you said, this is the first episode that you felt... You were into him, right?
Yeah, outside I was definitely into him. I wouldn't call him my MVP because he wasn't, like, valuable in that moment that he needed to be, but...
I mean, he was valuable. He fixed, like, the bed.
Yeah, that's true. He did fix the bed.
Like, you know, he buried a body,
that's
he burned a body.
More important. Yeah.
He did so many things.
Yeah,
good job,
true.
Joe. Who was your MVP?
My MVP, I'm going to have to say, this week was Beck, just because I think she, like, kind of realized things this week.
She's realizing things slowly.
And I feel like... Not that I'm gonna like her character, but I think this week she was able to kind of look on herself and be like, hey, I did this wrong, or I fucked up,
like,
or,
self-reflective.
Like, I need this, or, you know, I think at one point she even says, like, I don't know who I am, so, like, how the F am I supposed to know what I want?
That's
like
true.
That's a huge thing for her to say in episode 3 still.
And,
like,
she stands up to Peach, which is cool.
And she stands up to Peach, exactly. So I definitely think, like, she had some strong moments this week that I wasn't
back in Joe, back at our top of the list.
Yeah.
Bo or Jack. Jock?
Yeah, what's the like the
I don't
name?
Know. One of our
Jock.
Rewinders
I think
we're
Jock
talking
is
about.
Good,
Jock
right?
is...
It's because his name is too short. So it's like...
Both of them are too short.
True.
Beck.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Guinevere. Should be like Joannevere.
Like Jeer. Jeer.
Anyway, guys. You guys let us know which one you think is the best ship name.
LVP.
My MVP is Paco, because I can't stand his character.
This guy, man. This kid is like... Worst. Yo, you're so hard on this kid. Listen, but also, he did fuck
he's
up.
The worst he character. Really bad. Guys, he's the worst character ever written. I think he's awful as a story plot device. Like, I think that him forgetting the book and forgetting this and every single fucking episode, he's like,
it's almost like he's Joe's mistake. Like, every single mistake that's been going on has been because of Paco.
He's like a personal embodiment of every F up that you would ever make when you're trying to cover up a murder. Yeah. Is Paco embodied?
But also,
as a
he's an 8-year-old kid. Like, Joe, why are you even putting this pressure on this kid? You know?
Well, he doesn't. And that's the thing. In so many ways, I don't blame Paco because, like, Paco is a kid. I know that. I understand that. But he's just being stupid.
And also, like, he sees Joe as like his only friend. So, like, of course, he's gonna do whatever the F.
I guess
Joe
in that particular
to.
Regard, like, MVP is like retracted for the fact that Joe even decides to give that kind of power to Paco.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Paco I think in general, the way this script is currently written and how Paco plays a role in this story, it's just a little overplayed. Like, him being this, like, person that just keeps, like, dragging Joe down.
Yeah, if that's what's gonna happen every episode, like, his one mistake is because of Paco, like, I'm not down for that either. Yeah, it's kind of cheap.
And, like, how is he gonna redeem himself? Like, I keep asking that same question, like, what is his role? If he is this new character, what is the show gonna do that makes Paco a better character or a worse character? Because right now, he's, like, not so great.
Yeah.
He's just annoying. Just like any other kid.
Yeah.
Kids, who's your LVP?
My LVP is just gonna be Peach, just because she's just so, like, needy and desperate.
You see a lot of her true colors in this episode, sure.
And you know, whether or not she was probably obviously faking her sickness, it was just she's just a really, I don't know, like, weak person.
She weak.
The best line. My best line wasn't a line necessarily, but it was in the beginning with Beck and Joe when she talks about Candace, because I honestly didn't know whether or not, like, Beck even noticed it last week when that girl was like, my friend Candace. But the fact that she, like, drops it again this episode, I was like, oh shit, like, Beck did notice.
She perceptive.
Like, she definitely, like, she booked it. So, and I think that's going to be a really important, like, you know.
Definitely going to play a role later. My best line is when Joe is trying to bury the body and he wants to just tell Beck everything. Like, he wants to be like, listen, all these people are not good for you. And it's like his, like, full monologue or whatever. And he says, there's a traditional waiting period between every goddamn communication when you're trying to date someone. God, I hate this generation.
Yeah, it was such a good line.
And it's just so interesting that he's playing by these dating rules to kind of go through with...
Because he knows he has to, because he knows that, like, those are the rules.
Right.
But he's so right. He's like, what? They're so bullshit. Yeah. Like, why do I have to wait to message you back? Like,
But it's interesting because he almost ties himself to his own rules, even the ones that he hates doing. Like, this is like, I can't communicate with you after 3 days.
But that's what I mean.
Days.
Like, he has to do it because he knows that she plays with those rules.
Right. True. Anyway, I just thought it was an interesting commentary on society.
No, I loved it. I definitely love that quote. I think it's so true. And that's what I mean when I say, like, I feel like Joe has such amazing insights on our generation today.
Yeah.
And, like, he books all these things that is wrong with our generation.
Right.
But it's like, you're still playing with a girl that's following those rules. So why would you want a girl
Why would you want that?
You should find a girl who is the same
who
way
isn't.
As you, who doesn't give a shit about those rules,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, like, that's the thing. He's playing with in that game too. So.
True. All right, guys, that is the episode. Let us know what you guys are thinking. This is episode 3. We're gonna go all the way to 10, so we're not quite halfway done with the season,
but it's good.
But it's good. I'm enjoying it. Let us know what you guys are thinking from this episode. Make sure you guys are commenting, tweeting. We're gonna ask you guys every Sunday, even if we don't tweet it out. Just let us know what you guys thought about the episode, and we'll, you know, answer a few of the questions as we can in the podcast.
Yeah.
So thanks for
listening.
Bye.